water, so little bits of, you know, little white spots were left all over my mouth. So what happened is, Nurse Poppins put it on the scale and then said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm breastfeeding." She goes, "Stop it. Please give this baby food. She's going to die." And then the next thing she did, "And please treat this thrush that this baby has, and treat your nipples too." And this in front of a whole room of other moms. And I wanted to die.
This is Focus on the Family with Graham Schnell. And I'm Alison Schnell. You just heard local author and parenting guru Hetty Brits sharing some of her early experiences as a mom and the disappointment she felt when being a mother didn't just come naturally to her.
Alison, I think motherhood is one of the most challenging roles that any woman can play.
Mm-hmm.
There's the obvious busyness of raising kids through the different seasons, the sleepless nights through potty training, scraped knees, rushing kids to different school activities here or there, through discipline challenges, teenage battles. But beyond that, it seems as though mothers are blessed with an added burden. I heard somebody say that guilt comes attached to the placenta. There seems to be this natural guilt that mothers have over every aspect of mothering that isn't perfect. And I often think that perfection is defined by comparison to other perfect, seemingly perfect moms.
It's so true, Graham. And even though as Christians we know we shouldn't compare and we shouldn't feel that guilt and that we need to recognize our value in God, it's hard. I know. I've struggled with those feelings and those fears that I'm not measuring up to the supermom. So today we are incredibly excited because one of our good friends, Hetty Brits, is in studio to talk to us today. Hetty has partnered with us over the last few years, presenting parenting seminars around the country with Focus on the Family. Hetty's an international speaker and one of South Africa's foremost voices in parenting advice. She's the author of a number of books, including her latest, Unnatural Mom: Why You Are the Perfect Mom for Your Kids.
Hetty, welcome to Focus on the Family.
Thank you. I love being back.
Well, Hetty, I know that this book is birthed out of your own experience. You're a parenting guru and you help parents around the country and around the world, but you've been vulnerable in some of those seminars, even that where you've partnered with us, to share your experience of being an unnatural mom. Tell us where that started.
It started very early with in the hospital already, but maybe one story I can tell that many moms will identify with. We are so often measured by, you know, what do we feed these babies? Because that's kind of, for me, even the word mom is derived from the word that says breastfeeding. And this area, to me, was one of those where it is just very painful. I had a baby who was very lazy to drink, but I can't blame the failure of this thing on her. The feeding just never worked, and I ended up spending weeks in bed with this baby because that's what was supposed to work. Had gallons and gallons of rooibos tea, and then had bottles and bottles of this berry elixir, which is supposed to just turn you into a dairy. But what happened is it made me fat, along with the Ensure milkshakes and things that I had to drink. So I only got fat and miserable and felt like I'm not getting anything done, rooming in with the baby. Still no results. And everybody tells you it's because you're too stressed. Relax. Or, no, it'll just come. But none of the advice, none of the old wives' tales, nothing worked. And at some point, I just got so desperate that I called my sister-in-law, who never had a problem in this department, and said, let's go see somebody. And says, oh, she's heard of this nurse. And she's supposedly brilliant, especially in this area. And she's also a little bit concerned about her daughter, who was then just 2-3 months older than mine. So off to this nurse we went, and she had this little grey bun on her, you know, on her head like a crown. She was like the queen of breastfeeding, and I knew she was going to tell us what to do. And she looked a little bit like Mary Poppins, so let's call her Nurse Poppins.
Practically Sister perfect Poppins, in every way.
Of course. And she's going to help us make the medicine go down, you know, with a spoonful of sugar. But it wasn't like that at all, because here we were in this open clinic. So all these moms are sitting in rows, and your turn's coming up, and you see this nurse just putting her finger very unsympathetically in whatever this mom's not doing right. So my sister-in-law went first and put her little baby on the scales, and Nurse Poppins said, look at those bulging legs, clearly not a Miss South Africa.
Oh, dear.
And because this baby was overfed. And then she said, please stop feeding this baby. It's not about you. You know, the baby doesn't eat so much. And my sister-in-law left crying. And then it was my turn. And I put this little squirmy, little thin, emaciated little baby on the scales. And, of course, I realized she was going to be weighed. So I quickly made some formula on the sly and fed her just this little formula. But because I made it in such a hurry, I didn't dissolve the formula properly in the water. So a little bits of, little white spots were left all over my mouth. So what happened is Nurse Poppins put it on the scale and then said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm breastfeeding. She goes, stop it. Please give this baby food. She's going to die. And then the next thing she did, and please treat this thrush that this baby has, and treat your nipples too. And this in front of a whole room of other moms.
Sure.
And I wanted to die. So on the way home, I just bought formula and I was weeping because I said I would never do that. But I just
like
had to. Such a failure.
Yeah.
And then, of course, she was allergic to that. And, and so started just this never ending misery of not measuring up.
I can so identify with that. I mean, when we had our first, breastfeeding was tough as well. It really was. And when I finally had to bring out the bottles, every time I pulled out the bottles, I just felt like I was this failure sitting amongst the feeding moms, you know. Mm-hmm. I can't breastfeed, so I'm going to feed with a bottle, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was awful. It was, I felt so guilty, and I'd failed. And
judged? You feel judged?
Possibly judged. I don't know. I felt like they were judging me. Even if they weren't, I felt judged, and I felt like I was the failure.
Yeah, because there's the narrative that breast is best. So what's your reason for not giving your baby the best? Are you selfish?
Yeah.
Is it about you and what you prefer?
Yeah. Is it just easier not to?
Yeah, and they don't know the story behind the scenes.
Yes,
and that's the reality.
I mean, there are people who have had breast cancer who cannot breastfeed. There are people who are on medication, life-saving medication, that the baby can't be exposed to. And that's why they bottle feed. And we just somehow assume we know the reasons why our mom doesn't do it the natural way.
Yes.
And we assume that in a lot of areas.
And what is it about the culture that puts this pressure on moms? Is it always been the case? Is it just something that's inbuilt in motherhood? Or has the culture actually created that in moms? There's something that's changed along the way.
I think culture is a key word. It is a cultural thing, and it will change with culture. I mean, if you go to Russia, the culture is to potty train and be done by about 14 months at the latest. You should start at 9 months and then finish early. And we look at it from a Western culture and we say that's abusive and that's impossible, actually, because neurologically kids just can't have bladder control at that age. And then we look at the methods these mom use and we're shocked at what they do, leaving the babies on a plastic sheet so it can be uncomfortable enough when you wet yourself that you learn not to do it. And we go, oh my goodness, psychological damage. So yes, the culture has a code. Every country's culture has a code. In Egypt, moms still go to school with their kids for at least an hour or two until they're 7, 8 years old. They don't let a baby cry at the preschool gate. And we look at that, and that. So the mom who does that, who leaves the baby at the school and goes home, is bad. Is very, very, very bad. So the culture, yes, has something that randomly every nation or every country or every culture writes a code. But I think what's especially terrible, Graham, is that we don't ever shorten the list. So we still have the requirements our parents had, like natural birth, cloth diapers, which are coming back into fashion and whatnot. So we have these measurements of the perfect mom of the previous generations, and we just add to the list. Now, it's not just that, it's also only feeding organic. It's also now not doing sleep training, but the family bed, and now it's also homeschooling, which didn't exist. So we just extend the list and say there are now so many more things that we're going to measure you by. They didn't even, no GMO, no MSG, nobody even knew about those things, but that just gets, the list just gets longer.
And you must have read the 27,000 books, you know, to get all of that information, even before you think of falling pregnant. Because
yeah, it's all the information before and forever after.
So what are, you've mentioned some of these myths. Mm-hmm. What, you know, the typical myths of the super mom. You know, in your book you talk about the unnatural mom and not aspiring to this super mom status. I think I would imagine you're both saying you look at other women out there that seem to have it all together. Mm. They did breastfeed perfectly and their kids sit quietly on the mat in church while yours are, you know, running around. And I say yours, not ours, definitely not ours. And we have these myths that we say, well, that super mom must be A, B, and C. What are some of those?
It starts even before motherhood, just in terms of expecting that every woman should aspire to having babies as soon as possible. So just the maternal instinct should be intense with you. You should want babies as soon as possible, and you should be maternal. Yeah. And there are moms who just don't feel like it, and they wonder what's wrong with them. Is there a spiritual flaw in me if I want to be married for about 10 years before I start a family? Yeah. What? You're not going to get married and start right away? No, why not? What's wrong? Where are your fears? What lies do you believe? And sometimes there are fears.
Sure.
Sometimes there is something spiritual. But very often, it's just a wiring. And that wiring can even be put in there by God. Mm-hmm. And this woman, 3 years, 4 years into marriage, discovers cancer in her body. Mm-hmm. And she goes through chemo. And you're thinking, wow, doing this with babies.
Would have been tough.
This is a little bit of grace.
Yeah.
Mm. That I don't need to do this because maybe dad cannot play that role of taking over the mom duties.
Yeah.
So every family has their own journey, and even when those babies come into the family, we, by reading our Bible, can see God has his own timing. Now, how does he work out that timing? He also works it through our will and our desire. He times it according to that. He helps us family plan by whispering in our heart, it's time or it's not time.
Yes, definitely.
Because he knows our future better than we do. So we should not arrogantly assume, I know when it's time for Alison and how many children she should have. And how far apart is best for her. This is something God knows and reveals to a couple, I believe, and guides them in for many reasons, apart from just, you're a woman and this is natural and you should have kids.
How do you marry the principles of parenting with the potential judging of those that aren't maybe perfectly applying those principles? Because there are certain things that are maybe better principles than others. And so, you know, the way we discipline, there might be principles that we can put in place, the values that we have, while at the same time not judging that family that looks as though they're not necessarily getting all that right. So, you know, you want to step in and say, well, here's some advice. You know, look at us, we've got it right. And in some cases, that can be helpful, because you do want to say, you could try this. This is something that might help you, but not in a way that says, actually, you're failing. You don't measure up, and unless you do it this way or this way, you're actually not cutting the crate.
I think the Lord has a sense of humor there, where every family will have an area in which not only the mom, but maybe the mom and dad both are not too natural. And he's wanting the village to raise the child. He's wanting the body of Christ to play a role in every child's life. So hopefully there will be people speaking into all of our lives as moms, saying, this phase looks a little tough. It looks like maybe in this discipline area, neither your husband nor you are naturally wired to just step into every conflict situation. I can see you peacemakers. You're fun people. You're relaxed and chilled. So let me help you find those one or two areas in which you need to step up to the plate. When it's really about morals, and it's really about something that can become a character issue, when it's really something the Bible is very clear about, maybe let's step up. But to allow that parent to not step up to everything the way you maybe naturally do you? Leaving that space that maybe God is going to journey differently with his family to how he does with us. I remember I heard a story about a mom who homeschooled in a community where nobody did it. And it was incredibly intimidating for her. And she kept saying, but that's really what God told me. And I feel like I need to defend it all the time. And the other parents just felt, you know, this is not the way to do it. And she kept saying, I want to give my kids the best of me. And I feel this is the way to do it. And then a few years later, she was diagnosed with cancer and died very fast. And her husband reflected back on that and said that she always had this, why do I have to do this unpopular thing and carry so much judgment when I just feel this urgency, need to do it? And it was because God knew.
Yeah.
Time's almost up and your kids are going to treasure this. And maybe school can come later.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe formal schooling can come later for your kids. So that's, I think, always that respect of God knows what I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And that applies to our own unknown futures, but also to other people that we might be quick to judge, but that we don't know what's going on in their lives.
Yes, because, I mean, for me, one of the daunting myths is this whole always having, using only natural products, feeding only organic foods.
Yeah.
I always jokingly say, you know, if it's not good news for the poor, it's not the gospel. And the thing is, if, you know, this is an expensive thing to do everything the natural way. It is labor intensive and it is expensive. And we load this burden onto other moms. Just because we're passionate about natural doesn't mean somebody else needs to be. Because I think of a family who's very, very health conscious now suddenly having to live in a country where none of those things are available.
Yeah.
Which is not possible.
Yeah.
You're in Singapore in an apartment complex on the 17th floor. Where are you going to put your organic vegetable garden?
Yeah.
But God knew this is where he's taking your family.
Mm.
And that is why he liberated you and said, it's okay if you don't do it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't give you the right to laugh at that mom who grows her own veggies.
Sure.
In the backyard, because she's on her journey, and that's good. It's about a space of grace.
Yeah, definitely.
How do moms now, coming back to those moms that are feeling that lack of grace, they don't feel like they're measuring up, and they are constantly comparing to what they perceive as the super mom. How do they gain that measure of it's okay?
When they are taken back to the principle that God is an intelligent designer and he builds puzzles that make sense. He doesn't just make mysteries that make no sense. He makes puzzles that make sense. So he puts parents, grandparents, children into a system called family, beautiful one that doesn't always look like mom, dad, booty, sissy. That's not always the nuclear family.
Yeah.
He puts something together that will look like nobody else's, and there's method to the madness. And then that conviction that he has given me everything I need for life and godliness. The word says it.
Yeah.
So somewhere in what I have been taught, somewhere in the way he's wired me, is everything I'm going to need to raise these kids. It may be in my father-in-law, some of it, but it's in my system. It's somewhere. It may be in an uncle. It may be in a babysitter. It may be in a tutor or a teacher, but in my system is everything, because God knows the future and he knows my weaknesses. So it's a trust issue, Graham, to move the trust from myself to God and to say, I don't trust myself to do everything right. I have evidence that I don't. So no, I do not trust myself with my kids, but somehow God does. And God trusts me with my kids because he's got more than me in the lineup.
Yeah. And your book title, Unnatural Mom, Why You Are the Perfect Mom for Your Kids, doesn't mean that you are perfect.
No.
No, it just means, but you're the perfect mom for your kids, so you can actually give yourself a break and just accept that you are the perfect mom, but maybe you'll need help in some areas.
Yes, and maybe your weakness will shape your kids in a good way.
Mm.
I have a son who is very sensitive to mood and intensity in the room. He picks up everybody's vibes. And I give off a lot of vibes. I do not enter quietly or exit quietly. So I'm I'm very intense, which makes me uncomfortable for my son.
Okay.
He feels me, he feels my stress. He picks it up. He's only a child. What does he do with how mom is feeling? He doesn't know why mom's feeling like this. Mm-hmm. Is it him? And I can either try and change myself, or I can say, Lord, where does this seeming misfit fit into both our journeys? And the beautiful thing, my son's turning 16 in 2 days, and I see a calling on his life to be a psychologist taking shape. He always thought he was going to go the science route, but he's full of so much compassion, and it's his area of interest, and he's practicing on me. And he literally the other day said, Mom, I think I can deal with your emotions better if you will allow me to ask you a few questions. May I occasionally, I know I'm just a child and you are a grown-up, but may I occasionally ask you if you want to talk? Mm-hmm. And then it'll help me if I understand that it's not me when you like that, and that you're not angry and that you're not unhappy, that there's just a lot going on, and that you're not really overwhelmed even though you look like it. You like to be like that, but I need to understand that. And if I can say only one thing that will help you feel understood, then I will feel like I've made a contribution to this family. I mean, we can go to the psychologist now and he can tell me to change and he can tell my child not to be so sensitive or whatever, but a wise person who fortunately was in our life, Dr. Shirley, who's also been on your show and on your tour, said, but how about your son does occasionally play the therapist and you occasionally share what's going on?
Sure.
So even our seeming weaknesses and differences can be a way God journeys with both of us. So we become a gift to one another.
That's brilliant.
So the emphasis, if I'm hearing correctly, is not on trying to change. Mm-hmm. And obviously all of us are on a growth journey. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be aspiring to read the books and learn and do things better and differently as parents. But where we have, or where you have as mothers, this guilt and this comparison and this wanting to measure up to something else, the solution isn't in changing yourself, because actually God has created you to be that specific way for a purpose and to match your child or your children. And is some of the hope that you offer in that exact thing for moms to just recognize that God has designed them that way for a purpose.
Yes.
Have you discovered communities of mothers that have been able to grasp this and then support each other well rather than measure up to each other?
Yes, and that is a beautiful thing to see, because you'll see the mom that I call the pine tree mom is not the mom who flies into the conflict between kids on the playground or at church, but the rosebush mom is the one who absolutely thrives in conflict, so she wants to break up the fight. So I've seen a pine tree mom knowing, I'm not really great at the conflict, turning to the rosebush mom going, go sort them out and start with my child. He's the guilty party. And so we tag one another. And the palm tree mom, who's the fun mom who can play but forgets what happens again on Wednesday, will ask a boxwood mom who's got both her child's timetable and your child's timetable memorized, ask, what's the test on again? And so we lean on one another's strengths, and it's a beautiful thing that happens there.
Yeah.
Well, Hetty, you've quickly described the different temperament styles of mothers. And so we understand that these different moms will have different strengths and be better in different spheres of parenting.
Yes.
And moms are just trying to survive and avoid burnout. Give us some tactics for those, just practical tips for those different moms to avoid burnout.
Well, this pine tree mom who's the peacemaker should not let this rushed culture that's so achievement orientated phase her. If she wants to slow down, do less, have some peace and quiet, take a day or two off, she should be allowed. This rosebush mom who's the fighter, who goes in there and who's highly opinionated, should not feel like she needs to listen to all parenting advice that comes. She's allowed to challenge, to ask until it makes sense to her before she implements it, because she's rational and she needs to go for a goal that she identifies with. the Boxwood mom who's that routine one who knows everything that's happening. We also know her as the lollipop mom. It's okay for her to set aside time to plan and to schedule. And if people laugh at her lists, let them laugh away. Yeah. If that gives you the security of the illusion of control that brings down your pulse, go for it. Do it the way that works. The palm tree mom is the fun-loving one who gets the frowns because she's not strict enough or structured enough. Needs the child that's in her to play with the child that God has given her. And that's where she gets her energy back, to take that time out from all of the demands and have fun with her child unapologetically, because she's the dream giver and she can embrace that.
Brilliant.
Well, Hetty Britz, author of the book Unnatural Mom, and I do really love the subtitle, Why You Are the Perfect Mom for Your Kids. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for bringing hope to moms that might be struggling out there.
Thank you, Hetty. It is always such a joy and privilege to have you with us. Thanks.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I really loved Hetty's description of what it looks like when moms lean on their God-given strengths to add to the community of moms around them, and then how that leads to moms being unified and accepting of one another's inbuilt temperament styles. I think so often moms feel judged by those around them, and they desperately want to make sure they don't mess up. But isn't it freeing to hear the truth about us being the perfect mom for our child? Because now we can stop second-guessing ourselves. Hetty has put all these ideas we've spoken about and so much more into her book called Unnatural Mom. Among the topics of discussion is helping you to understand and forgive the mothers who hurt you, and also learning to embrace your capabilities as well as your challenges. You'll find Unnatural Mom when you shop at safamily.co.za or give us a call on 031-716-3300 to order. And then if you haven't been tuning in to Facebook Live at 5 every Tuesday and Thursday, I want to invite you to do so. We've been hearing from marriage strategists Mo and Pindi Grootboom on Tuesdays in September. And on Thursdays, Hetty Britz has been sharing from her wealth of knowledge and wisdom in the parenting arena. You are welcome to post your questions and comments so that we can interact with you there. Thanks for listening in to Focus on the Family today. I'm Alison Schnell, inviting you back next time when we'll, as always, help you and your family thrive in Christ.